Good day, everyone, and welcome to New Matter, the SLAS podcast where we interview life science luminaries. I'm your host, SLAS Scientific Director Marshall Brennan.
Today, we're joined by Ross Lagoy from Intellia Therapeutics, a Cambridge-based biotechnology corporation.
And last summer, Ross gave a talk at SLAS Transform 2020 on fully automated platforms to detect on-target CRISPR-Cas9 genome editing. And we thought we might take the opportunity to dig in a little deeper. Welcome, Ross.
Thank you. Thanks very much. It's very nice to meet you. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, well, hopefully you'll still believe it's nice to be here when I hit you with the first traditional SLAS challenge of describing your day-to-day work in 10 words or fewer.
All right. I think I got it in the 10 words. Exactly. So, yeah, Intellia, developing technologies and new analysis pipelines to help cure patients.
Excellent. Excellent. You made it through that. Now that we've had the elevator pitch, a little more room to breathe. Can you tell us a little bit more verbosely about, you know, what it is that you do at Intellia, how that relates to the work that you talked about at Transformed?
Yeah, so it took a lot to get to sort of that phrase in 10 words in my life. I think where I was able to kind of get and summarize what I do in general on the day to day, that really helps to summarize it. But yeah, I think what I presented earlier last year was really sort of a platform technology that helps to accelerate the next generation sequencing platform, which is a critical platform for identifying if CRISPR worked or not. So it's definitely an essential thing. And I think a little bit more broader than that, I think that it's sort of just a culmination of a lot of things, like a lot of different technologies and automation that it brings in science and just even CRISPR itself as a technology that it's sort of helping to explain. I think that's really what it is. It's sort of impressive to me even what it's doing.
Well, that's really great. I think when we think in the popular culture way of CRISPR gone wrong, that there's a lot of things we could think about there. But in reality, like, what is it that you're trying to detect there? Like, what are the scenarios that you're trying to develop technology to avoid? Like, what are the in-lab outcomes that you're concerned about?
Yeah, so I'm fairly new to the field, I guess, in CRISPR. I think more of my background is in automation and engineering. And I think it's more what I can bring to helping to solve these problems in science and in CRISPR and in gene editing and gene therapeutic delivery. But I was never super involved in CRISPR in the past. I think it came out really in some of the seminal papers in 2013, and that's when I started my graduate career. And this was a new tool, and I was actually studying worms in C. elegans. And there were these seminal papers in doing homologous recombination, so actually just inserting GFP into the genome of a worm. And that kind of really showed us all in the field the power that we had now to answer different questions. We started thinking about diseases we could model and certain things like that. So that's actually sort of the biological side of what I did in the past. And then, but the engineer, I was in an engineering department. So what we did was try to use these tools and try to use automated technologies in the C. elegans field in order to answer some new questions. So I think where I'm at now is very different than where I was 6 or 7 years ago when I started my graduate career. But I think the theme is really like using these new technologies. CRISPR, optogenetics is one thing I used a lot, and automation and these new sort of techniques that we could use to help accelerate the pace of science. And that's sort of where I see what I've been working on a lot. So I wouldn't say for what I'm doing at Intellia, it's sort of another part of the picture, I guess, a part of my journey and sort of like, what can we do with automation? What scale can we deliver it on? What can we impact in the field?
So I guess thinking about the ability to detect CRISPR activity, is it that CRISPR is particularly error prone and you need to be able to like even out those outcomes? What's the particular challenge that you've overcome here?
Yeah, I think with CRISPR, I mean, we all know about sort of the different approaches to editing nowadays where it's targeting the PAM site and the 20 nucleotide sequences and all the changes you can make to those sequences and different parts of the genome you can cut and, you know, all the different frequencies of cutting, depending on what you do change, what you're targeting and all of that. So there's definitely a lot going on there. But for what I can talk to you a little bit more firsthand is when I used it in graduate school, we're using it to do disease modeling. It wasn't necessarily like guide optimization or something like that, but it was to try to find a region in the genome that we were interested in that we could target and edit specifically and induce a mutation that resembles a human mutation and see how could we study that now in a disease model. So that's where my experience and my firsthand sort of actually doing CRISPR in the lab was my first experience with it. So I think it's very powerful for all those types of things where it's finding the best guide sequence that can edit a specific target in the genome for a specific disease, or also just the disease modeling aspect of it. And even all these CRISPR screens and things that are going on, I think it's just a tool that can be used very widely. There's a lot of different uses for it, for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Let's take a step back and talk about your career. So you said that you're formerly an engineer. You're clearly interfacing with biologists on a regular basis. What's that been like? What has been your experience working so interdisciplinarily? What are the key takeaways for people that are interested in crossing those boundaries?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I feel like I'm still learning that. I think that's an evolving question. And every day I kind of think about it. Being on the interface of technology and doing it in the lab by hand. I mean, there's so much you can do by hand. There's so much you can do with a robot. There's so much you can learn from both, from the robot and from doing it by hand. I think we're moving in an interesting direction with automation that I've kind of experienced. I think there's different scales of automation. In academia, there's a different scale. And in industry, there's a different scale. There's different uses, I think, for automation where you could be automating tedious, repetitive tasks, but that opens up doors where you can do things that you couldn't do humanly possible before. So I think what I'm seeing now is a lot of that, I guess. And for people in the future getting into this area, I think it's kind of just keeping an open mind and just observing everything that's going on around. I think there's a lot of new trends that are starting. There's a lot of things that we need that have been around forever. But keeping that vision on like what can we do that's new and push boundaries, I think that's where if you can kind of frame yourself in that mindset, then I think that'll be really useful in the future for sure.
That's great. What do you think is the big missing piece in connecting the bench to automation? Like, what is the keystone toward really closing that gap?
I can think of it in a couple of ways. When I was in grad school and what we were doing there, when I started working with my doctoral advisor, a lot of our thought process was, let's take out all the tedious work and just press go and then run the experiment and then come back later and it'll be completed. That was really how we were kind of approaching a lot of what we were doing. But in order to do those things, you needed to integrate cameras because we were monitoring behavior of worms, or we were monitoring live brain activity in worms. So we had to leverage all of these different technologies and think creatively about, all right, how can we keep these worms still because they kind of move around all the time? And if we were looking at brain activity, these were challenges that we had to overcome. So I think that kind of gets into a little bit of the details of what I was doing by hand, but that's sort of where it began with me, I think. I think it was really thinking about where can we just press go and like execute a fully automated experiment. And with that being the hands-on person, I think it really is the training and learning how to use the equipment. It's really thinking about the problem and what you're trying to solve. And is this the best approach to do so? And then just, yeah, really kind of like giving it off to the automation and being like, all right, it's to answer this question. Now run it and let's see what it can do and then learn from that. And I think that's really like being very hands-on in it and being immersed and trained in the automation, I think is really the key to like actually using it successfully. Yeah.
Yeah. I think when people think about automation, you start with what sounds like a very simple idea and you find out that there's a bunch of really complicated solutions. And so getting yourself to the point where those complicated solutions aren't as intimidating is easier said than done sometimes.
Definitely. Definitely.
So I want to take the last few minutes just to really try to talk about your career. What do you think has been your most proud achievement to this point, either in lab or outside of lab in your career?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think when I think of this, I think of a few moments, definitely, where I was like these aha moments where you're like, I did something and you're proud of it. I think for one, leading up to this, there are many, but for one, it was really being invited to present at a conference in Japan. And I think that is a really cool example of how you can come up with an experiment and a design and an idea with collaborators and others and generate data, analyze it, and have it be impactful enough to share it kind of in the world. And I think traveling to Japan, being that sort of far away from home and a new culture and presenting on a stage and to experts in the field and people I haven't met and some people that I did know. I think that was a really impactful moment where it was kind of like all of these cool ideas and everything. Now we can share it, communicate it with everyone, and we can build on it together. I think that was really one of the epitomes, I guess, in my career in graduate school. I think there are others too, like where you're in the lab and you're like, I can't believe this worked. Like you wait for the sequence to come back and you made the edit and you see that it actually induced the mutation you were hoping for years ago. And we did that with a collaborator at UMass, and that was amazing. And I think the automating of a first experiment, I think too, was really cool, where it was like, we had this idea to do a well-plate-based screen, and it was a new type of dynamic image-based high-content screen. And I think pressing go and coming back 12 hours later and seeing that it did what I thought it was going to do and start looking at the data, that was, we didn't even have sort of data analysis pipelines fully built out to handle the kind of data that we collected. So we created a new bottleneck. So it was kind of these moments where it was like kind of pushing these boundaries. Yeah.
That's awesome. Thinking back to what you said about you being able to go to Japan and present and whatnot, I had a very similar experience where it's like, you take for granted, you know, your own research culture, either here in the US or wherever you are. And then you get to go experience, especially in Japan, where the research culture is very different from where it is in the US, but I think in really subtle ways. Do you think that getting exposed to that has influenced how you go about your lab work these days? How has that changed how you think about your research, being exposed to that different culture?
Yeah, definitely. No, I'm glad you had a similar experience. I think having that experience early and at the right time too, I think is super important. And I definitely, even just thinking about like, yeah, what we're doing in the world, it definitely made it more broad, the impact that we're having. But it also made it feel kind of small because it was like, we're in a tight-knit community and we're doing this around the world. And it's a very sort of like niche application for what we're doing, but the impacts are big. So I think that's where it was interesting to see like what we were doing and how it kind of like branched out. And it makes you feel a little bit smaller when you're traveling. Whenever you're kind of around, you're like, wow, there's so much else going on. But it also makes it feel like super approachable and doable and impactful. So I think it was an amazing experience, definitely. Hopefully there'll be more of those.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, based on, you know, the work you're doing, I suspect that these sorts of opportunities will present themselves to you in short order. But, you know, it's always really great to be able to have that global perspective. And I think, you know, especially as a young student, that probably had a big impact on you, because I think, you know, this certainly happened to me in graduate school, and I think a lot of people can relate to, is that you spend a lot of time at your bench or in your lab, or, you know, in my case, like, you know, in a glove box or something like that. And it's very easy to sort of, you know, get ensconced in your world. And there's, you know, the eight different scientists that you see cited all the time because you're really head down in your research project. And then, you know, you get these sort of opportunities to kind of come up for air, as I sort of put it. And, you know, you go to a conference or you meet someone and really get that perspective, like you said, on how small of a place you're chipping away at, but how big of an impact that can have. Mm-hmm. And so my advice to students, and I'm curious if you have anything to add to this, is to sort of seek out those opportunities to, you know, just talk to people outside of your research bubble as often as possible, because, you know, it's that interdisciplinary sort of exchange, especially in our line of work, makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And I think, like you're getting to with the advice and stuff, I think finding those opportunities, talking to the people that will help you with those and mentor you. And I think also like thinking that there are a lot of different paths to get into the same area. And I think we all can contribute something different. I mean, I was from automating worm experiments and I'm hoping will definitely take off soon in the future and have helped for sure in my past. But I think also, yeah, just knowing that there are a lot of different paths, there's a lot of information out there. When I first joined, I was like, I felt like I knew a lot, but I didn't know much at all, really. And then I'm still learning and trying to soak it all in. So I think, yeah, I think that's kind of where I felt, and I'm excited to keep kind of going forward.
I always used to joke with my PhD advisor that the PhD in PhD stands for properly humbled, because I feel like you haven't really properly ascended as a scientist until you put yourself in your place and recognize that, like, okay, you know, nature is bigger than I can ever hope to explain. And so it's time to, you know, do my part in it, which is both exciting and humbling.
Exactly. I totally agree with that.
Well, we are running low on time here, Ross. And so I want to give you an opportunity to, one, tell our listeners where they can learn more about you. And then on the end of this, obviously we had you give a really excellent talk at Transform last summer. And so I'm kind of curious about what you're excited about accomplishing in 2021. Like, what is the thing that you're most excited about for this year?
Yeah. For this year, I'm excited about a few different things. I think meeting more people, more leaders in the field, being able to have more experiences like the Japan one where I can present and sort of information share and try to hopefully inspire other people and make an impact to the field, continue to do that and be a mentor to others. I think I've learned a lot. And I think the best way to contribute back is to really teach people how to do kind of what you knew how to do and know how to do and are learning. You can learn from just doing that and helping others too. So I think that this year, meeting more people, I think will be definitely really nice.
All right. Well, on behalf of SLIS, the New Matter podcast, and our listeners, thank you so much for your time. And I'm really looking forward to our next conversation, Ross.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me again. Any questions, I'm always happy to answer by email. And I have my website, just rosslagoya.com, and I post things there. And more information about me you can find anytime. Always happy to talk. Thank you.